Angelicus and its Ephesians.
Hi, and welcome to episode 61 of Spurbs Herbs. Today we're going to be talking about quite an important herb in Chinese medicine, Fang Feng, or Sapashnikovia radix. I love saying that. I don't know why. It's a fun word to say, Sapashnikovia radix and Siler roots. So without further ado, let's get into it. So today we'll be exploring a very useful herb, Fang Feng or Siler root. This is a relatively commonly used herb in Chinese medicine for treating colds and arthritis. These don't seem related, but in Chinese medicine they can be, which we will be investigating. And as usual, we will be exploring something a little different. We will do an introduction to the Taoist philosophy. We've talked around Taoist philosophy. We've introduced Taoist philosophy, but we've never actually honed in on Taoist philosophy. So we're going to do that today. Please join us and don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss out on even one exciting episode. Before we get going, I do want to tell you guys we have started a new webinar series. And I wanted to let my podcast listeners know about it before we got too far into it. It is Integrative Nutrition in Chinese Medicine. We'll cover biomedical and Chinese concepts of nutrition and explore the complementary and alternative concepts that are part of the modern supplement industry. This series will be one live class per month covering a category of nutrition and will include some basic biochemistry, nutrition, and supplements available on the market. In other words, it's going to be the perfect combination of biochemical nutrition, supplements, Chinese medicine, and real-world use cases. Why would we use these supplements? That's what kind of motivated me to do this, is I see all these supplements on the market, and there's always new ones coming out, and I don't know what half of them do, or I do recognize half of them, a lot of them, and I go, okay, yeah, but I learned that in biochemistry. Why is that a supplement? So that's what this is about. If you are a practitioner of any stripe or just interested in nutrition, this is the series for you. And you can sign up for the first class or the whole series at www.integrativemedicinecouncil.org. I will only be teaching each class live one time. After that, it will only be available as a recording. We've already recorded our first one at this point. So don't miss this opportunity to learn about a topic all our patients ask about and get a firm understanding of the basics of integrative nutrition. Okay, let's start it. So I was looking at, one of the toughest things I have to do with these podcasts, Spurbs Herbs podcast, is this something different. I wanted it in there because it allowed me to do what I wanted to talk about, kind of expand on a whole bunch of interesting topics, and really kind of go a little bit away from just, here's this herb and here's what it does. So I really love this something's different. This is episode 61. I have done 60 of these, and I was looking over a list of the last 60 somethings different, I believe that's the right plural, we have done on this podcast, and as I really wanted when I started, they are a myriad and varied list of interesting topics, all at least a little associated with herbs. We have talked about Confucianism in episode 13, we've talked about Buddhism in the relatively recent episode 58, and we have talked about Taoism a lot in many forms, but never really head on with a good something different. And that changes in this episode. So before we get into just set the thing, one of our sort of standpoints on Chinese medicine is that it's based on the major philosophies in China as it was being developed. And really, Taoism is probably primary among the three major philosophies there involved with Chinese medicine and the development of Chinese medical theory. So we're going to talk about that today. Confucianism is, of course, really important. It actually adds a lot of organization and some perspective into Chinese medicine as well, and really did along with Taoism, really make it fundamental to what we do today. Buddhism, of course, came in much later. It's Indian in nature as opposed to Chinese, but is still incredibly important, and it has a huge influence on Chinese medicine later on. This, you know, it really started trickling into China in the first and second century CE, and it really didn't have a huge impact until a few hundred years after that. So, and the impact is a little bit softer than Taoism, Confucianism, but it's still there. But we haven't, like we said, we haven't really talked about Taoism in depth. We've talked about different aspects of it. We've talked about Zhuangzi, who we're going to mention today, one of my favorite of the Taoist philosophers. And so let's get into it. Let's talk about what Taoism is and where it started. And it first emerged during the Warring States period of 475 to 221 BCE. And so, you know, the Warring States period, as the name implies, was a very peaceful time during China history, and everyone got along and sang Kumbaya, or the Chinese equivalent. No, this was a lot of war. There were seven states vying for power. This is before China even existed. China doesn't exist at this point. It's just, think of it as groupings of people, as different cultures. I hesitate to use the word tribes, but these are states, I think is a good term for it. There's seven states vying for power, trying to unify China, which actually happens at the end. This is 221 BC. That is when the Yellow Emperor comes in, Shihong Wangji comes in and establishes a unified China for the first time in history. But before that, lots of war. Seven states vying for power, incessant warfare. And out of warfare, it seems historically, we start to get flowerings of philosophy that comes out. And there were a lot of different philosophies that did come out. And what's interesting, not just in China at this time, but also in Greece, we have a lot of different philosophies coming out during this time period as well. And so, you know, there's something about that's fomenting worldwide in this thing. So competing philosophies of rule arose, and examples of these are Taoism and legalism. Those are the two major ones that kind of came out of this period of time. Others did too. Confucianism definitely did as well. It just initially was not very strong. Neither was Taoism as far as a philosophy of ruling. Legalism actually came out the strongest, and we haven't talked about legalism because it doesn't have a huge impact on Chinese medicine, but it does have a huge impact on China. And so I am going to bring that up probably in the next episode. That's my goal. So we're going to talk a little bit about legalism in a little bit. But Taoism really came out. And Taoism, if you want to know about Taoism, I love, because of the pictographic nature of the Chinese language, it's always very useful to look at the ideogram or the pictogram of the character. And it kind of tells you some of the history and rationale behind it. Tao itself is made up of two radicals. One radical is shou, or head, and the other one is chuo, which kind of means go, so moving or go. And together, it's sort of, and someone else says it's like a human head or a person walking. So it implies a path, and that's one of the translations of Tao, is a path, a road, a way, you know, and in terms of a roadway sort of thing, a method, an avenue. And so it's been translated as in a capital D, you know, Taoism, and that is, you'll see this spelled Tao and Dao. Dao is the proper way to spell it at this point. Tao refers to Wade Giles' system of Romanizing the ideograms. That is no longer used anywhere in the world. It was used up until about 10 years ago in Taiwan, while China converted to Pinyin way back when. And so this is Pinyin now. Taiwan finally did convert to Pinyin, so the proper way is D-A-O for Tao, though you will see it as T-A-O, pronounced exactly the same. It is never pronounced Tao. So if you do that, or you go to the restaurant, one of my favorite restaurants in Vegas is Tao, and they do pronounce it T-A-O with the T sound rather than the D sound. And I asked them, I said, people just don't do the D sound, so it's Tao. Still love the food there. It's still good, though. I haven't been in years and years, so I don't know if it still is, but I love the food when it was there. So anyways, So Tao with a capital D is sort of the way of nature, the way of ultimate reality, is sort of that translation. And I love this translation, which is very wordy. Original undifferentiated reality from which everything in the universe evolves. So that is very good. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's Taoism. That's the character for Tao. And one of the major books, and some people from the West will say sort of the quote-unquote Bible of Taoism, is called the Tao Te Ching. It's not really a Bible in that sense, like this is the word of God, but it is sort of the first book that comes from this philosophy, and it's attributed to Lao Tzu, who's considered the founder of Taoism in the 3rd century BCE. Though specific authorship is questioned, you know, when it gets to be that old, it's very, very questionable, but Lao Tzu is who it's attributed to. And he said, ruling a country is like cooking a small fish, which on the surface goes, okay, that's really strange metaphor. But really what that means, and remember, we're talking about a philosophy of ruling. So this is sort of the underlying philosophy. But the idea is when you cook a small fish, you do very little to it. You just cook it. You don't season it heavily. You let the natural flavors of the fish come out. It's designed, when it says ruling a country is like cooking a small fish, it means don't do much to it. That's sort of the underlying rule of Lao Tzu. I mentioned legalism earlier. Legalism was much more like carrot and stick. Like your job, you know, as a ruler is to make sure that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So you give them benefits when they do the right thing and you punish them when they do the wrong thing. Well, like I said, we'll talk about legalism later. But it's a relatively heavy hand, but it adds a lot of control. This does not have a lot of control, but it's a very light hand to it. So there is an early historian of China, Sima Qian, who, you know, you have to give with some leeway with, because he was writing about historical things hundreds of years after the history had happened. He's not considered the most reliable of historians. However, he's one of the few that have written anything about this stuff. And we have others in the West, you know, if you can look at, you know, Homer to a certain extent, not that he's a historian, but there's one that I'm forgetting that's a Greek-Roman historian who is, you know, not very good, but one of the few sources we have existing today. So Sima Qian is in that, and he talks about a meeting between Lao Tzu and Confucius, who were contemporaries, basically at the same time. And here's a quote from this, and again, probably made up, never really happened, probably, but this is what Sima Qian said happened, so. And this is Lao Tzu talking to Confucius. All those of whom you speak have long since moldered away with their bones. Only their words remain. When a capable man's time comes, he rises. If it does not, then he just wanders warily around. I have heard that good merchants keep their goods buried deeply to make it look as if they had none, and that a superior man whose character is perfected will feign stupidity. Give up, sir, your proud airs, your many wishes, mannerisms, and extravagant claims. They won't do you any good, sir. That's all I have to tell you. And I always add, personally, good day, sir. They didn't say that, but I add that in. So that is Lao Tzu talking to Confucius. And it kind of lays down the fact that Confucianism and Taoism are very different and I always learned opposites. You know, my teachers were, my martial arts instructor in particular was quite Taoist, had very little positive to say about Confucianism. So I'm always trying to overcome. There's positive things about Confucianism, so I'm always kind of overcome, those initial, discussions. But there you go. Taoism doesn't have a lot of respect for Confucianism in general. So continuing, Sima Qian does talk about Lao Tzu, and again, we don't have anything else to really dispute this. He said Lao Tzu worked as a librarian in the state of Zhou. I have in parentheses here, Lu, question mark. So again, we're not even sure exactly which state he may have worked in until it was breaking up. And despairing of finding listeners, he decided to leave, and at the border was urged to write his thoughts. The idea was the border guard wouldn't let him pass the border of the state until he had written down his philosophy, his thoughts. And this is what is thought to have become the Tao Te Ching. Remember, Tao, we said, is the way, the path, those sort of things. Da is, again, if we look at the radicals involved, it's has radical for chur or footstep and jur straight, with the heart, sheen, added later. And what this means is like straight walking or, and you can add in with heart with that. And it's translated as moral or moral virtue. And if you look at philosophy, morals are our actions, are our ethical actions. And so that becomes a really interesting aspect of this as well. And then Jing itself is from silk thread, and then the phonetic to give it the sound. And the original meaning was warp in the loom, so it had to do with weaving. But really what it means is a classic. It, you know, we have that silk thread, which is, if you look at the old quote-unquote books, they were pieces of slate or paper that were tied together with silk thread. And so this idea of Jing is sort of a revered classic. So really this is, the Tao Te Ching is translated as the classic of the path of moral virtue or path of morals or something along those lines would be a translation, rough translation of Tao Te Ching. And believe me, there are hundreds of them out there. So just take that with a bit of a grain of salt. So what does the Tao Te Ching say? There's a bunch of different things that the Tao Te Ching will say. I have some examples here. We'll go over a few of them as we get into this. In chapter 2, indeed, the wise man's office is to work by being still. He teaches not by speech, but by accomplishment. He does for everything, neglecting none. Their life he gives to all, possessing none. And what he brings to pass depends on no one else. As he succeeds, he takes no credit. And just because he does not take it, credit never leaves him. This starts to show some of the patterns in the Tao Te Ching, which is, it's very paradoxical. It says, you know, do this and the opposite will happen, or vice versa, or something along those lines. And that is one of the sort of underlying threads of the Tao Te Ching. Chapter 4. The way is a voice. And I was trying to explain what Taoism is and what Tao means. So the way is a void, used but never filled. An abyss it is. Like an ancestor from which all things come, it blunts sharpness, resolves tangles, it tempers light, subdues turmoil. A deep pool it is, never to run dry. Whose offspring it may be, I do not know. It is like a preface to God. So that's a translation. That God thing is not really a very Taoist necessarily concept. I think it's like a preface to heaven. Might be a better way to translate that potentially. And again, you'll find hundreds of different translations. I've read a lot of different translations, and you learn a little bit from all of them. So it becomes very useful. Here are a couple more. Chapter 8. The highest goodness, water-like, does good to everything and goes unmurmuring to places men despise. But so is close in nature to the way. So water is a very repetitive metaphor and theme in the Tao Te Ching as well. So we see that quite a bit. Chapter 11, this is one of my favorites. 30 spokes will converge on the hub of a wheel, but the use of the cart will depend on the part of the hub that is void. With a wall all around a clay bowl is molded, but the use of the bowl will depend on the part of the bowl that is void. Cut out windows and doors in the house as you build, but the use of the house depends on the space in the walls that is void. So advantage is had from whatever is there, but usefulness rises from whatever is not. So there are some you know, good quotes. There are 81 chapters, so we did a few of those chapters. They're, you know, they're some smaller, some larger, but that's basically a taste of the Tao Te Ching. There's an underlying concept in Taoism, an important concept called Wu Wei. And this is translated as non-action. Wu meaning not, and Wei is to do. So not doing or non-action. And really kind of the underlying thing about this is by doing nothing, everything is done. Water is the best example, and a quote here from the Tao Te Ching is, why is the sea the king of all streams? Because it lies lower than they. And Tao follows the ways of nature. That's another quote, though I'm not sure exactly from where. So Wu Wei is a very interesting concept, and I think it can be very easily misinterpreted. My martial arts instructor, who I would put in the category of a Taoist priest, I don't know if that's, he never would accept that, but you know, that's, I think, in the ballpark, he basically would say that Wu Wei has been misinterpreted, and basically says, you know, he had a lot of friends when this concept first hit the United States who would get high and just go, dude, I'm doing Wu Wei, you know, and he hated that. It's like, and what he actually said was, a better way of thinking about is, rather than doing without doing, is almost, the way he would explain it was almost like doing it in the absolute most efficient and minimal force necessary. And so one of the examples he would say, he would do this elaborate drawing and show a house down below a hill, and at the top of the hill was a big boulder. And then he would ask, okay, well, how would you protect this house from a boulder? And most people go, oh, I'm going to build a big fence so if the boulder comes down, that won't hit it. And he said, no. Wu Wei is this. Wu Wei is you traipse up the hill and you put a little pebble right in front of the boulder. So if the boulder dislodges, the boulder will be deflected away from the house. And so that pebble is sort of the concept of Wu Wei, as opposed to not doing anything and just letting it sit there and smash the house, or doing a whole bunch of stuff and trying to build up protection around the house. A little pebble was all it took in order for that to happen. That was how he interpreted Wu Wei. So I want to talk a little bit about Zhuangzi, and then we'll get into today's herb. We briefly introduced Zhuangzi in our 6th episode, so if you want to go back to that one, that's going back a ways. Zhuangzi also, so that's Zhuangzi, and you will also see him Chuangtzu. Again, that's the difference between Wei Giles and Pinyin, exact same pronunciation, just slightly different spellings. And he lived from 369 to 298 BCE. Zhuangzi, which literally translates as Master Zhuang, was one of the earliest thinkers to contribute to the philosophy that has come to be known as Taoism. Zhuangzi was a contemporary of the Confucian thinker Mencius. Zhuangzi is ranked among the greatest of literary and philosophical giants that China has produced. According to Zhuangzi, spontaneous behavior, including thought, enables us to respond directly to reality as it truly is, to transcend the limitations of our social and linguistic worlds, to avoid unnecessary danger, and to identify with and nurture the primal source of our nature. I have a quote for him, from him in just a second. But before I do that, he's the one, you've heard this before, I'm sure, he's the one who wrote this down for the first time, and it kind of gives you an understanding of where he's coming from. And this quote is, and again, I'm doing this from memory, so if I misquote a little bit, that's my fault. But he basically said, last night I dreamt I was a butterfly, or am I now a butterfly dreaming I'm a human? That was Zhuangzi, and that was a lot of his writings were just like to warp your mind into different realities. Very cool. Love Zhuangzi. So in his teachings of Zhuangzi, book 18, part 2, section 11, much more meat to this than the Tao Te Ching, he says, what the world honors is riches, dignities, longevity, and being deemed able. What it delights in is rest for the body, rich flavors, fine garments, beautiful colors, and pleasant music. What it looks down on are poverty and mean condition, short life, and being deemed feeble. What men consider bitter experiences are that their bodies do not get rest and ease, that their mouths do not get food of rich flavor, that their persons are not finely clothed, that their eyes do not see beautiful colors, and that their ears do not listen to pleasant music. If they do not get these things, they are very sorrowful and go on to be troubled with fears. Their thoughts are all about the body. Are they not silly? Very interesting. Love it. So again, just a brief introduction here. So some other expressions of Tao, some other aspects that kind of come out. Sorcery. I don't know if I'd put a whole bunch of there, but there's a little bit of that. I kind of compare it to like Kabbalah and Judaism, the mysticism aspect of it. There's an aspect of spirit worship with Taoism. There isn't a god in Taoism. There's sort of the universe. Alchemy is a big thing, and we're going to, I think, mention that just a little bit in just a minute. We've talked about that in other episodes. Sexology is a big aspect. Martial arts, meditation, Qigong, Neigong. So this is also Yang. This would all, a lot of these would be considered part of Yangshen, which we're going to be talking about, which is nourishing life. And that would be Qigong, Neigong. Those are, you know, exercises for qi and for internal stuff. And medicine. Medicine's a big aspect of Taoism as well. So some direct contributions of Taoism to Chinese medicine. Essence as the void. So that's an interesting one. And it's controversial, but this idea of jing or essence is as being somewhat analogous to Taoism, the Tao. Sun Tzu Miao, who I've mentioned before as well, we've talked about on the absolute sincerity of great physicians, which is sort of the Hippocratic Oath from Chinese side of things. He was a Tang Dynasty doctor and alchemist, and he advised doctors to use Laozi and Chuangzi as guides for daily life. And there's a question mark here. He may have invented gunpowder, according to Joseph Needham. If you're not familiar with Joseph Needham, I read a biography. He's fascinating. World War II. Biologist, actually quite famous in his own, was sent over to study China, and he wrote the rest of his life he spent writing Chinese, civilization and science in China or something along those lines, huge multi-volume, just listing, at that point China was considered sort of a backwater country, and Joseph Needham basically single-handedly said, no, they are the foundation of a lot of what we take granted for in civilization, so just really interesting stuff. So continuing with Tao's contribution to Chinese medicine, reflected in the Wangdi Neijing, which remember is sort of quote unquote the Bible of Chinese medicine, it's the first existing book in Chinese medicine. And part of that is that Yang Sheng that I was talking about earlier. Yang Sheng literally means nourishing life, refers to various self-cultivation practices such as Qigong and meditation and martial arts, things along those lines. And the idea underlying Yangsheng and in the Wangdi Neijing is treat disease before it manifests. And it reflects the importance of harmonizing with nature for good health and longevity. That's a very Taoist concept. The concept of qi is considered Taoist. The yin and yang theory is considered relatively Taoist. I mean, it extends before this sort of Tao Te Ching aspect of it, but still the yin and yang theory is absolutely considered Taoist in thought. Those are all aspects of Chinese medicine and Taoist contribution. Chinese medicine is generally predicated on the three philosophies, worldview, religions, as I mentioned, Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism. And with this introduction to Taoism, we are better able to understand Chinese herbology and Chinese medicine in general. And of course, hopefully, we will be better able to dive into today's herb. Let's do that. Today's herb is feng feng or xyla root. Comes from the family Apiaceae. And the species specifically is Sapashnikovia divaricata. And then it says Turks and Shishk, which again relate to the biologists who categorized it. Chen Chen, which is our other major, you know, remember we have three major texts that we usually talk about. That's our second one, Chen Chen. They say Lederberiola divaricata is considered to be a substitute. In fact, when I learned this herb originally in my trainings, it was, I'd never heard, they didn't even say Sapashnikovia, it was Lederberiola. And it wasn't until the next version of the textbook that Sapashnikovia kind of supplanted Lederberiola as the main species. So, but today it is Sapashnikovia, and I do enjoy saying Sapashnikovia, so I'm happy. Anyways, the medicinal part is the root, Radix. The English translation of Funk Funk, I love it, is to guard against the wind. Love that. Guard against the wind. Other names here, of course, are Ludovariola root, Ching Feng Feng, Cao Feng Feng, Tong Yung, or Bronze Rue. Rue, I believe, refers to a flower. In Japanese, it's Bofu, and in Korean, it's Bong Pung. Okay. Let's talk about the Apiaceae family briefly here. The Apiaceae family is the parsley or carrot family. It includes edible plants and spices such as the carrot and parsnip, anise, celery, chervil, coriander, caraway, cumin, dill, and fennel. And poisonous hemlock is also a member of this family. There are about 34 genera. Though one source actually says there are about 300 genera, so an order of magnitude more, so that's different. But they agreed around on the species. One source said 3,700 species, another one said 3,000 species. I consider those to be ballparky similar. It's interesting to me how inexact these things can be, but that's generally how they're expressed, about, or one source will say X, and another source will say Y. And some of the underlying aspects of Apiaceae are they have hollow stems, tap roots, and think about that. It's a tap root is the main root of a primary root system growing vertically downward. So think carrot, it would be a tap root. And flat top flower clusters known as umbels. In fact, a previous name for this family was the umbelliferae, referring to these umbels, which is where the stems of the flower cluster radiate from a single point on the end of the stalk, kind of like an umbrella. So that's where the umbels, and that's sort of these aspects are all part of the Apiaceae family. So getting back to Feng Feng, Bensky and their team, that's our primary, one of our textbooks, say the dosage is 4.5 to 9 grams. Chen and Chen, Brand and Weissman, our third textbook, both say the dose is 3 to 10 grams, but Chen and Chen say you can actually go up to a maximum of 30 grams for this herb, so that's interesting. Categories are all very similar, but slightly different translations, so I always like to get into them. So Bensky and his team puts this herb in the warm, acrid herbs that release the exterior subcategory under herbs that release the exterior. Chen and Chen say it is in the wind cold releasing herbs subcategory of exterior releasing herbs. So again, Bensky is saying this herb is warm and acrid and releases the exterior. Chen and Chen say it actually releases wind cold. So it's more about the action than the inherent nature of the herb. But it's exactly the same thing, just different aspects of it. And Brandon Weisman say it is a warm, acrid, exterior resolving medicinal under the exterior resolving medicinals category. So again, slightly different language, but all very similar sentiments. Bensky and his team say it is acrid, sweet, and slightly warm. It enters the bladder, liver, and spleen channels. And both Chen Chen and Brandon Weisman agree with that. Or another text, Zhou and Chen, this is our Chinese medicinal identification and illustrated approach, which actually is edited by Brand, so one of the authors of the other book, agrees but say it's warm, not slightly warm. So that's interesting. But all the other three texts said slightly warm. History of this is pretty basic. Both Bensky and his team and Chen Chen say the original source for this herb is the Shendan Ben Sao Jing, or the Divine Husbandman's classic of the Materia Medica. In the second century CE, we talk about this a lot. It is the first known, first existing book. In other words, there may have been other books, but they are no longer in existence. This is the first existing book that talks about individual herbs. So this is one of the original herbs, quote unquote, original herbs, so important historically. So let's talk about warm, acrid herbs that release the exterior. So that is the category that this belongs in. In episode 49, we discussed cool acrid herbs that release the exterior, and we discussed warm acrid herbs that release the exterior in episode 51. We will repeat that information here just for sake of completeness. According to Bensky and his team, exterior releasing herbs are those that release disorders lodged in the very superficial levels of the body. When external pathogenic factors, including wind heat, wind cold, wind dampness, and summer heat, invade the body, they first attack in its superficial exterior aspects. Symptoms associated with the exterior then appear: chills, fever, headache, stiff neck, and general muscle aches. Sometimes sweating will appear, which resolves the condition, in which case no treatment is necessary. At other times, however, there will be an absence of sweating, or even though there is sweating, is not accompanied by any change in the condition. At this juncture, herbs that release the exterior are used. Most exterior-releasing herbs are diaphoretics, that is, they release or expel the external pathogen influences through sweating. There's a saying in Chinese medicine, when the disease is in the skin, sweating will bring it out. Some of the herbs that release the exterior have additional functions, stopping coughs and wheezing, controlling pain or spasms, and venting rashes such as measles. Herbs that release the exterior can be further divided by character and function into warm acrid and cool acrid classes. The warm acrid herbs dispel when cold and are used for exterior disorders when the fever is mild, the chills severe, and there are other signs and symptoms of when cold, including headache, body and neck pains, and absence of thirst. So that's an introduction to this category of herbs. Let's talk about what is good quality fangfang. So according to Bensky and his team, good quality consists of long, thick, unbranched, and unbended roots with dense annulations on the crown, like the head of an earthworm. The cross-section reveals a pattern of a chrysanthemum flower in the center. So that's really interesting. And if you look at the picture we have up, you can definitely see that. Zhao and Chen. So remember, Zhao and Chen is that book, Chinese Medical Identification, gets really into the quality of herbs. They say superior medicinal material is strong with a loose and soft texture. The fractured surface is light brown at the cortex and light yellow at the woody portion, with an obvious chrysanthemum heart shape. It is of a long conical or cylindrical shape, which gradually tapers downward and is slightly curved. The exterior is grayish brown and rough. The texture is light in substance and is loose, easily broken, and with an uneven fractured surface. The odor is quote-unquote distinctive, and the taste is slightly sweet. There are some technical terms in looking at fangfang. The first one is broomhead, or zhaozhoutou. Refers to the dark brown or brown hair-like remnants of the leaf base, which is often seen at the head of the roots. Earthworm head, or qiaoyintou, refers to obvious dense horizontal striations at the head of the root medicinal materials. Chrysanthemum center, zhuhuaxin, refers to radial lines seen on the fractured surface of the medicinal material and appear similar to an open chrysanthemum flower. And phoenix eyes, fengyang juan, refers to the fractured surface of the medicinal material, which has a round yellow center with a light yellowish white outer layer like the eyes of the mythical Chinese phoenix. I love these metaphors and similes. So what does it do? What are its Chinese medical actions? So according to Bensky and his team, fangfang releases the exterior and expels wind for headaches, chills, and body aches due to externally contracted wind cold. It also expels wind dampness and alleviates pain for exterior wind damp painful obstruction, especially when wind predominates. Now this is where that arthritis comes in, because this wind damp painful obstruction B is sort of a category of different disease states which arthritis would probably fall under. So that's why we say it can help arthritis. It expels wind and relieves spasms as an auxiliary herb to alleviate trembling of the hands and feet and tetany. Tetany is strong spasm. Also for intestinal wind due to imbalance between the spleen and liver manifested in recurrent painful diarrhea with bright blood in the stool. And also for migraine headaches. There you go. Interesting. Brandon Wiseman say it has several functions. It dispels wind and resolves the exterior. It overcomes dampness and relieves pain and resolves tetany. So very similar. Chen Chen similarly say its functions include dispels wind and releases the exterior, dispels wind, cold, and dampness and relieves pain, dispels internal liver wind and relieves muscle spasms and cramps, relieves diarrhea and stops bleeding, and is hemostatic, which means it stops bleeding. When charred to ashes, Fong Fong stops bleeding, it says. Finally, Zhao and Chen also say it resolves the exterior, dispels wind, overcomes dampness, relieves pain, and stops convulsions. So we see tetany, spasms, convulsions, all in the relatively same ballpark. And finally, actually, I said the finally last time, but finally, the Divine Farmer's Materia Medica, so this is that Shendong Ben Sao Jing we were talking about, a translation of that says, Fong Fong is a middle-class herb. They talk about inferior, middle, and superior class herbs, so it's a middle-class herb, which is good for treating disease, not for everyday use. So Fong Fong is a middle-class herb and treats great wind head dizziness and headache, malign wind, wind evil, blindness, wind moving around the whole body, causing pain and impediment in the joints, and vexatious fullness. I love those terms, but there you go, very similar. How is it prepared? According to Bensky and his team, there are a couple of common preparations of Fong Fong. There are dry fried Sipashnikovi or Chow Fong Fong. So frying or baking with moderate heat until deep yellow will reduce its wind expelling and exterior releasing actions, but improve its ability to lift the spleen yang. For this reason, it is especially useful for treating spleen deficiency diarrhea as an important formula for painful diarrhea, Tong She Yao Fong. And the other one is charred Sipashnikovia or Fong Fong Tan. The herb is fried or baked over moderate heat until black, but keeping its original shape. Prepared in this manner, it will enter the blood level with quite strong effects in warming the blood and stopping bleeding. For this purpose, it is often combined with Zingiberus rhizoma preparatum or Pao Zhang. So that's basically prepared ginger, fresh ginger. It's not fresh, it's prepared, it's cooked ginger. Codenopsis radius or Dongshen and Asini Coriae Cola or Jiao, that's acide glue. So this is from donkeys. And for such conditions as irregular menstrual bleeding with pale colored blood due to cold from deficiency. Chen Chen continues with preparations, say, use the unprocessed form for the strongest exterior releasing action. Use the charred herb for maximum hemostatic effect. This makes sense, similar to Bensky's and his team. And Brandon Wiseman agrees, saying, for bleeding, it may be charred before use. Western uses of this herb. It appears this herb is primarily a Chinese herb, and a web search yielded no traditional Western uses. The PDR for herbal medicines, which I consider to kind of be predominantly Western, likewise does not mention this herb. And we will cover some of the pharmacological effects of this herb when we talk about science in just a few minutes. So Bensky has a nice commentary on this herb. Sipashnikovia radix Fong Fong expels wind, but has a moderate, gentle nature, slightly warm, but not parching, sweet, and not at all harsh. It is known as the most moist of the wind herbs, although this simply indicates that it is less drying than most wind-expelling herbs. It can be used for all wind patterns, hot or cold, upper or lower body, exterior or interior. This ability to reach the deeper interior levels of the body to track down and expel wind is one of its special characteristics. By expelling wind, it treats headaches, general body aches, and spasms, although its ability to relieve muscular tetany is too weak for it to serve as a chief herb for this problem. In the treatment of wind damp painful obstruction, for which it is particularly appropriate when the patient is weak or blood deficient, it can eliminate wind dampness. This is because its effects are less drying than many other herbs used in the treatment of painful obstruction. Another valued quality of Fong Feng Feng is its ability to relieve intestinal wind, reduce tenesmus, which is that desire to go without being able to go to the bathroom, and reduces diarrhea. According to rectification of the medium materia medica, the Yao Xing Cao, or written in the Qing Dynasty 1644 to 1911, it lifts the yang qi and stops intestinal wind and bleeding from the bowels. The medical discourses of Zhang Juren Yu Huo, written in 1960, so relatively modern, concurs, saying it raises the spleen yang and alleviates diarrhea. A new compilation of Materia Medica, the Ben Sao Xin Bian, written in 1694, Chen Shi Duo observes, surprisingly, Feng Feng can be used with when pathogenic wind is not present. If used with Astragali radix huang qi, it can shut out wind from entering the skin. However, this combination cannot be used once the wind pathogen has already entered. There is always a deep significance when the ancients name something by pondering the name, one obtains comprehension. And Chen here is referring to the literal Chinese meaning of feng feng, the herb's name, to guard against wind. Chen Shen has a very short commentary. Feng Feng can be used to detoxify the body from many substances such as heavy metal, arsenic, an overdose of herbs such as fuzhou, radix aconite lateralis preparata. Comparisons with other herbs. So Bensky has compares this herb with three other herbs versus Angelica pubescentis radix or Du Huo and Notoptyrigi rhizoma su radix Qiang Huo. Seeking accuracy in the Materia Medica, the Ben Sao Chi Zhen, written in 1773, notes that compared to Angelica pubescentis radix or Du Huo and Notoptyrigi rhizoma su radix Qiang Huo, Feng Feng is somewhat lighter in weight and its nature is also somewhat more neutral. As this implies, Feng Feng is less drying, less aromatic than either of the other two herbs, which means that it is less able to disperse a heavy accumulation of turbid dampness, but is more gentle in its effect. This suggests, for example, that it will not injure the yin as rapidly. Feng Feng is also useful for treating intestinal wind or painful diarrhea, which is not true of the other two herbs. So versus Schizinepidae herba or Jingjie, both herbs eliminate wind, release the exterior, and disperse wind cold and wind heat. But Schizinepidae herba's Jingjie, wind expelling and exterior releasing actions are weaker and more superficial than those of Feng Feng. Because Schizinepidae herba's Jingjie nature is light and spreading, its ability to disperse wind heat from the blood is derived from its spreading nature. Its wind expelling action is limited to the skin, muscles, and blood. Feng Feng, on the other hand, is stronger at expelling wind that is deep in the body and can also overcome dampness. It is appropriate for all types of wind. As noted by Li Zhangzhe, wind under the skin but outside the membrane, Schizinepidae herba Jingjie masters it. But Schizinepidae herba Jingjie cannot enter the bones and flesh like Feng Feng can. Because of this, when treating wind disorders, the two herbs are often combined to great benefit. So just like the comparisons of the three herbs, there are three combinations that Bensky and his team talks about. And one of them is with this herb Jingjie, Schizinepidae herba. So we just talked about this combination is less warming than Ephedra herba Mahuang and Cinnamomum ramulus Guizhi. It thus can be used for exterior patterns in any season. It can even be used with pathogenic wind heat if other wind heat dispersing herbs are added, such as Morifolium, Sangye, Menthe haplocalysis herba, Bohe, Forsythia fructus, Lian Chao, and Chrysanthemi floss, Juhua. Feng Feng is considered a moistening wind expeller, meaning only that it is not as drying as most wind dispersing herbs, while Schizinepidae herba Jingjie is neutral in nature. They can therefore be used together to expel wind and stop itching in dermatological complaints. If these herbs are cooked until charred, their wind dispersing effect is lost, but they can be used to stop bleeding. This is especially true of charred Schizinepidae herba Jingjie Tan. So that's one combination. Here's another one with Gentiana macrocephala radix, or Qinjiao. This herb is acrid, bitter, and slightly cold. The acrid flavor disperses while the bitter flavor drains. It also enters the liver channel to relax the tendons and stop pain, which adds to its effect when expelling wind and removing dampness. Feng Feng is acrid, sweet, slightly warm, lifting and bringing out to disperse. It is therefore appropriate for all types of wind disorders and is also able to overcome dampness and stop pain. The two herbs have similar actions and are thus mutually supportive. They are an indispensable combination in prescriptions for the treatment of wind and dampness. Furthermore, among herbs that expel wind, both of these herbs are considered to be relatively moistening. One is slightly warm, the other slightly cold, so the temperature is balanced. This pair can therefore be used regardless of whether the pattern is excessive or deficient, long-term or recent, as long as there are symptoms of wind damp, painful obstruction, spasms of the tendons, or numbness of the limbs. And finally, the third combination is with Attractor Lotus Rhizoma, or Songju. When used together, this is the red Attractor Lotus, by the way. When used together, the effect of these two herbs is focused on expelling wind and treating dampness. Feng Feng is best at dispersing wind dampness in the exterior. Attractor Lotus Rhizoma Songju for parching interior dampness. It also has a certain sweat-inducing action. This pair is commonly used for externally contracted pathogenic wind, cold, and dampness, leading to chills with no sweating, headache, heavy head, lethargy in heavy limbs, as well as stifling fullness in the chest and gastric cavity. It is also useful for relieving the symptoms of painful obstruction, aching joints, heavy limbs, and generalized aching discomfort. A third use derives from an appreciation of Feng Feng's ability to lift the yang and regulate the spleen. Together, Feng Feng enhances the dampness drying and spleen regulating effect of Attractor Lotus Rhizoma Songju in order to treat diarrhea when dampness has obstructed the spleen and stomach, preventing the clear yang from properly ascending so that dampness pours down. Contents of Feng Feng, there's a lot of them according to Dubensky: volatile oils, dihydropyronochromones. Chromones, we're going to talk about chromones in just a minute. Coumarins, say coumarins are a type of benzopyrones containing a benzene ring fused to a pyrone ring, are the most abundant chemical constituents of S. Sapochnikovia divaricata. They have extremely diverse structures, which are divided into simple coumarins, pyrono coumarins, furano coumarins, and other coumarins. And five simple coumarins isolated from the herb show a variety of biological activities, such as dispelling phlegm and anti-tumor activity. There are also acetylenic compounds, polysaccharides, including sapochnikovian, A, B, and C. Whenever a chemical is named after the herb, that's probably an important chemical from that herb, sapochnikovian, A, B, and C. And other constituents such as beta-sitosterol, which we've mentioned in earlier episodes, an important constituent of a lot of herbs. That same scientific paper from Young in 2020 continues to say chromones, subclass of flavonoids, are a class of oxygen-containing heterocyclic compounds and are the primary active components of S. diverticulum. They have good anti-inflammatory, free radical scavenging, and immunostimulatory effects. So they help inflammation, they are antioxidant, and they help the immune system. So let's talk about the science here. Chen and Chen say this herb can be antipyretic, so in other words, lowers temperature, antibiotic, especially against Shigella, Pseudomonas, Staphylococcus aureus, and antiviral against influenza viruses. Two-sided studies also have this herb as part of a formula to treat arsenic poisoning with an N of 278, so that's a pretty good size study, and for chronic low back pain with an N of 316. Young, in their study, say previous studies have demonstrated that S. diverticulata, divaricata, Exhibits a broad range of pharmacological activities, including anti-inflammatory, analgesic, so helps with pain, antioxidant, anti-proliferative, so that means it can be anti-cancer, anti-tumor, so very similar, immunoregulatory, anti-allergic, anti-pyretic, remember that lowers temperature and fevers, anticoagulant, so it helps the blood, it's a blood thinner. I don't like that term, but that's, you know, what is commonly called a blood thinner. Blood circulation promoting, same. Anticonvulsive, anti-leukemia, so again, that cancer aspect. Anti-atherosclerosis, so it helps the heart. And hepatoprotective effects. Hepatoprotective means it helps the liver, protects the liver. Most of the studies supporting these conclusions appear to be rat or mice studies, so take these with a grain of salt. Drug-herb interactions involving Fangfeng did not yield, a search for drug-herb interactions involving Fangfeng did not yield any results. One paper states there are no apparent cytochrome P450, 2D6, or 3A4 interactions, which are major targets for drug-herb interactions. So this does not appear to have major drug-herb interactions. The American Herbal Product Association's Botanical Safety Handbook puts this herb in interaction class A, which means herbs for which no clinically relevant interactions are expected. Concerns. There's always concerns with these. We in Chinese medicine, we say herbs are yin and yang. There's good and bad aspects of them. So Bensky and his team say under cautions and contraindications, contraindicated in cases of exuberant fire from yin deficiency, spasms from blood deficiency, or in the absence of pathogenic wind, dampness, or cold. They continue with traditional contraindications. An ascending floating nature readily agitates liver wood. Thus, Fangfeng cannot be used for wind stroke, postpartum dizziness, convulsions or spasms, nor in headaches from blood deficiency, rather than wind cold, diarrhea, which is not from cold dampness, or difficulty in passing stool or urine. Qi rebelling upward, causing nausea, fire rushing upward, leading to cough, yin deficiency, night sweats, and yang deficiency, spontaneous sweating. Because it can drain excess from the lungs, mistaken conception will tend to drain upper burner primal qi, according to Harmon Benefit in the Materia Medica, or the Ben Sao Hai Li, written in 1893. And then they also have another section under called toxicity, and it says allergic reactions have been reported affecting the skin and digestive system. Chen and Chen say acrid and slightly warm, Fangfeng may consume qi, yin, and body fluids. Therefore, it is contraindicated for patients who have yin deficient fire, muscle cramps and spasms because of blood deficiency, or who have conditions that do not include the presence of wind, cold, or dampness. Since Fangfeng is ascending in nature, it should not be used in patients with headaches or dizziness due to liver yang or liver wind rising. And Brandon Wiseman similarly say, use with care and tetany due to blood vacuity and in yin vacuity with effulgent fire. So very similar. The American Herbal Products Association's Botanical Safety Handbook puts this herb in its safest category, safety class 1, herbs that can be safely consumed when used appropriately. All right, we're wrapping things up right on time. We started our podcast today with a discussion of Taoism, read some excerpts from the Tao Te Ching, and discussed its application to Chinese medicine. And then we discussed Fangfeng, an interesting and pretty important herb in Chinese medicine used to treat external wind and arthritis and joint pain in Chinese medicine. Generally a quite safe herb, though caution should be used in certain conditions and further research into its efficacy is warranted. Overall, another interesting look at a Chinese herb. In our next episode, we'll be looking at another formula category, supporting and releasing formulas. This is an interesting category of formulas that do almost two opposite things in Chinese medicine, tonify the body while releasing the exterior. We will look at the underlying Chinese theory and discuss formulas in this interesting category. And as usual, we will be exploring something a little different. Please join us for the next episode. It's going to be a doozy. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you like this podcast, please do us a favor. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app, and we really appreciate that. And you can get this course as a continuing education and get more info on my upcoming Integrative Nutrition series at www.integrativemedicinecouncil.org. You can always get in touch with me at Dr. Greg at sperbsherbs.com, sperbsherbs.com, or at our website, www.sperbsherbs.com. Thank you. And we have our usual bibliography. Thank you very much.
Sperbs Herbs.
The proceeding was presented by Dr. Greg Sperber. We would like to thank Janelle for all her support and everybody else who contributed to this program.
Janelle.
Timothy Dobbins.
Roger Campbell. Campbell.